From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of June, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. The folks at the Andersons will join us to take a quick look at the cash grain market. And we'll hear about the hogs and pigs report released by USDA last week and what that means going into the last half of 2020 and the first half of 2021 with Western Illinois University's Jason Franken. He's written an article that was posted to the Farm Doc Daily website today. And we'll do all of that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn today up 9 1/4. It settled at 3.26 1/4. December at 3.34 3/4. The new crop up 9.5 cents. And March at 3.45 1/2 for next year. 8 3/4 higher July of next year. In the corn at 3.58 1/2 up 7 1/2 cents. July soybeans for the day at 8.66 1/2, a penny and a half higher. The November at 8.61 1/2 up 1/4. In January futures, one higher at 865. Next year's July at 873 1/4, up 5 cents. The bean oil up 42 cents at 27.62 on the settlement price, and bean meal down $1.60 at 280.50. Wheat futures, July contract, soft red, 11.5 cents higher, settled at $4.85 1/2. The hard red in the July at 428 3/4, up 7 1/2 cents. Live cattle futures in the June, 30 higher at $95 even. August there at 96.47 1/2, up 45, and feeder cattle for the day at 133.50, up 90 cents per 100 pounds. July lean hogs, $45.37 1/2, up 10 cents for the day. Crude oil at $39.79 a barrel, about $1.30 higher. Ethanol futures up 3 6/10 cents at $1.20. And heating oil at diesel fuel at $1.16 9/10, 3 3/10 cents higher. Gasoline on the RBOB at $1.18 9/10, 3 6/10 cents higher for the day. And natural gas up 18 cents at $1.72 6/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has rallied about 400 points. The U.S. dollar is up 0.11, and the gold futures at $1,775.20, up $1.90 for the day. We're now joined by Kirk Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you. Hope you had a great weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of a hit and miss rain event over our way. We're luckily still on the dry side of it, but yeah, it was a nice, enjoyable weekend, a little humid. Visiting with producers across the Midwest here, it seems like it was a deluge of moisture, anywhere from 4 to 8 inches or else limited amounts. So kind of hit and miss. There's additional moisture on its way. We'll see how that fares as we go through the week.
Just one quick thing. We'll go through the week, but there will only be 4 trading days for the week. The markets are closed on Friday as we get into the July 4th weekend. We have lots of things to go through prior to the time we get to there, starting with tomorrow's grain stocks and acreage report from USDA. That'll be released at 11 o'clock, and you can find those numbers on our website or my Twitter account right at that point. WillAg.org. Or the Twitter account is at Commodity Week. What are your expectations, and what is the trade thinking about those reports tomorrow?
Well, the numbers are there compared to a year ago on grain stocks. I think the grain stocks is probably the main one to watch. Wheat stocks down 100 million bushels, corn down 250, and the beans down 391 million bushels compared to a year ago. Corn estimates about 4.9 billion, beans 1.39. The corn would be the interesting one to kind of keep an eye on. One, did they factor in slower ethanol usage on the corn demand side, or did they raise feed demand, feeding less DDGs? So that's kind of the key number to watch in through here. As far as acreage, the average trade estimate is 95.2 million acres on corn. That's down 1.7 from March intentions. Bean acres went up about 1.2 million acres, 84.7 compared to the March estimates. Was the producer far along enough to give some estimates that were accurate, or was there still some switching around? We'll see how that unfolds. what probably moves the bottom line more than anything is the yield. For example, if we come in with less acres on corn by 2 million acres, that's going to come in and lower the carryout. If you keep the current yield at 178.5, it's going to lower the ending stocks by about down to 2.9 billion bushels. But when you look at the crop conditions report and the optimism that we did a good job farming this year, there's some analysts that have yields as high as 182 bushels per acre on corn. So if you use a higher yield, that's going to offset what we're going to lose in acres. So the acres numbers are going to be a benchmark to go by, but the yield's going to be a factor on it. Same thing on beans, probably a little bit more of a concern. When you add extra acres, and some analysts has the bean yield as high as 52 bushels per acre, that could change the carry out from a 395 million bushel carry out up to 650 million bushel carry out. See what this afternoon's crop conditions report shows. Corn conditions are expected to be 73% good to excellent versus 72% to last week. Soybean conditions, 70% good to excellent versus 70% last week, Todd.
What happened in Chicago today? Why did the pressure come off the corn market in particular?
That's a great question. You know, the commodity gods must favor Mondays for a change here. So it was well welcome for those that's been following what happens on Mondays. One, option expiration took place Friday, and I think it was some follow through on that. Those July calls expired, worthless for the, and the ones that sold them collected money. That was kind of step one. Secondly, tomorrow morning's first notice day on the deliveries. Deliveries are expected to be zero for corn, beans, and wheat. Meal deliveries are expected to be about 500 contracts, soybean oil about 2,500 to 3,500. So I think we saw a little positioning ahead of that. Then the big news item, as you all well know, is corn futures position in the funds are estimated to be short about 300,000 contracts of corn. End of the month, end of the quarter, oversold, RSI levels down to in the low 20s for corn and wheat particularly, and these reports coming up and wanting to dress up the month-end statements is a key factor in the buying interest. The estimated fund buying going at midday was about 12,000 contracts of corn and about 3,000 contracts of wheat as we went into midday there, Todd.
Historically, is the July 4th holiday, whether it's on a weekend or not, a turning point for the marketplace at all?
Could be. It has in the past. It's mainly on weather, changes in weather patterns, forecasts. Notoriously, it's hot and dry, then we get a rain, it goes down. But as we move into this three-day weekend, it'd be interesting to see how it comes out next week here as far as the forecast. Forecast did lean just a little drier, but we'll have to miss these rains to see a big fluctuation. One thing that, you know, we saw is the voice of the tomb. A longtime trader had specific dates to watch in the marketplace. And the voice of the tomb recommends buying December wheat on July 1st. So that's probably more due to the fact that harvest activity wheat starts to wind down around the 1st of July.
Anything from the livestock sector today?
Kind of steady. You know, we had the hog pig report there last week, and the market took it on the chin but was able to hold together. The cattle and feed report, a little bit of shuffling in numbers, and they were able to hold together there as we started this week.
And then one final note. I made a trip into the grocery stores over the weekend. It looks like the livestock or the meat counters are pretty full again.
Yeah, we're cleaning up. We've got the packers running here, full blast. We've got the shelf stock. There's some featuring. When you look at the pork loins, the wholesale level, they're 73 cents a pound. Hams are 35 cents a pound. And as these tomato plants get going, you need to keep an eye on that bacon. They're at $1.83 a pound at the retail level or at the wholesale level. So hopefully those savings will passed on, and it's nice to keep this meat moving because its feed usage, I believe, is considerably higher, true feed usage, considerably higher than what the trade believes.
Thanks so much.
Take care. Be safe.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find most of our agricultural programming in its entirety for you to listen to whenever you'd want, or you can look us up as a podcast. Find us in NPR One, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and Spotify too. Up next, we'll take a closer look at the meatpacking industry and the impact of COVID-19 on the labor force there. We know workers in the meatpacking industry have been on the front lines during the COVID-19 outbreak. Many of them are members of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. UFCW President Mark Perrone says COVID-19 is still going strong and hitting their union members as well as non-union workers very hard.
COVID-19 still is very real. And what we're seeing is overall increases in cases again. The last time we did this call, we mentioned how some union and non-union employers had done away with hazard pay, or you can call it heroes pay in some cases, companies like Amazon, Walmart, and Kroger. Even though that we're over 100 days into this pandemic, the fact is COVID-19 and its crisis that it's created hadn't passed.
Perrone talks about the impact of COVID-19 on the workers in his union.
Based on the information that we have, over 196 of our members in food retail, meat packing and food processing, and healthcare have died. A total of 238 of our members across all the industries that we represent have died. Over 29,000 of our members in food retail, healthcare, meat packing, and food processing have been impacted or exposed to COVID-19. And over the last month, over 2,300 of our members have been impacted or exposed.
And here's what he says about the initiatives the union will be pursuing to get their workers paid and protected while they're on the front line of COVID-19.
First of all, we're going to be calling for every retail, food operation, meat packing and healthcare, non-union and union, essential workers to immediately, as a minimum, to be paid $15 an hour. And we also want the reinstatement of all hazard pay or hero pay in all states where cases are rising, and to directly connect hazard pay to those number of cases. Secondly, we're going to be calling for every state, county, government to mandate the wearing of masks in public places to compel employers and companies to enforce the use of masks.
Again, that's Mark Perrone. He's the president of the United Commercial Food Workers Union. Our thanks to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for bringing us this story. For Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, the June Hogs and Pigs report from the United States Department of Agriculture showed an increase in the size of the national herd. It was another all-time record increase, says Jason Franken. He's an agricultural economist at Western Illinois University and writes an article on livestock for the Farm Doc Daily website every other month. The June 1 Hogs and Pigs report inventory was 79.6 million head. That's up 5.2% from last year and just above the pre-report numbers. It, he says, is in general a continuation of the industry expansion, which started back in 2014 and runs contrary to the market expectation that hog producers slowed total production during the first few months of the COVID-19 pandemic.
This growth partly reflects that, contrary to expectations, that the March through May pig crop would be 1.3% smaller than it was in 2019. It actually came in 1.4% greater with 1.2% more sows farrowed and a record 11.01 pigs safe per litter, just surpassing 11 pigs per litter for the same period last year.
Franken says the larger pig crop should imply a larger number of hogs going to market this fall. Further out, he says the intentions of hog producers to raise fewer pigs doesn't quite square with the number of animals in the breeding herd.
Still, the numbers suggest that producers are responding to recent low prices and the likelihood that COVID-19 will continue to constrain slaughter rates and demand.
USDA again has revised down the per capita consumption of pork in the United States. It now stands at 50.4 pounds annually. That's down from the 2019 number by 2 pounds per person per year. Pork exports, however, have been very good. 702 million pounds of pork were shipped in March, for instance. That's primarily to China and Hong Kong.
However, COVID-19 is also expected to negatively impact U.S. pork exports through constraints on processing and lower world economic growth and incomes for the rest of 2020 and into 2021.
So, with more market hogs, less adjustment to the breeding inventory than anticipated, and a softening of domestic and export demand, the low market prices are expected to continue, thanks Jason Franken. Profit margins, he says, could perhaps be above the cost of production by the second quarter of 2021. On this Monday, let's check the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He is at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for taking the time with me today.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I'll start here in the United States. Tell me about your assessment of the weather forecast for the growing regions.
Yeah, well, certainly here of late, we've seen a ridge of high pressure really become established across the plains, and that's where really the main heat and dryness issues have been here recently. As we go through the next couple of weeks, we are going to see now ridging of high pressure begin to expand and encompass more of the central U.S. And as a result of that, we are going to see here across the Corn Belt, rainfall prospects begin to decrease compared to the rain activity here of late. And then also temperatures will be warming up to above normal levels and actually stay that way throughout much of the next 2 weeks. Now, the most extreme heat will still stay out in the plains, but certainly it'll be more creeping into or towards the core Midwest as we go through the first 12 to 13 days of July.
And then if you get further out, do you see anything into the second half of July we should be concerned about?
Yeah, we do feel that ridging will continue to have an influence on the Midwest during the middle to latter portion of July. So as a result of that, this increasing risk of seeing more heat as well as reduced rainfall prospects in various areas of the Corn Belt, that risk will continue to be elevated as well.
Are there other risks around the planet that you're watching?
Yeah, at this time, the one area of note with also elevated risk for heat and dryness, that's the Eastern Black Sea Corn Belt. So in countries like Ukraine, especially Eastern Ukraine, and then Southwest Russia, that's where the hottest and driest conditions will be also associated with a ridge of high pressure as we move into the first half of July. It's not influencing Western Europe. It's really more of an Eastern Black Sea ridge. And at this time, though, as some of their crop begins to go into pollination stage with temperatures in like Russia reaching close to 100 degrees. Certainly that risk of seeing some issues is also on the rise.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. He joined us here on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. We're now joined by Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons. Hey, Greg, thanks for being with us. So glad you're on hand for the afternoon. It was a good day in Chicago. The corn market managed to rally a little bit. Is that because all the basis contracts flushed out last week?
Yes, we saw a lot of price last week. Farmers didn't want to roll those basis contracts, didn't want to pay another 3 cents a month for storage or DP. I would say we bought a third to 40% of the corn, and then two-thirds, three-fourths got rolled. So that's a big percentage of grain being sold in 1 week, and the markets reflected that. We were down about 15 cents in old crop corn, 20 cents in old crop and new crop corn last week. And so, you know, now that we flushed that out, it feels like, you know, we've hit a lull in farmer selling. With the report tomorrow, maybe the funds want to cover some short positions. They've definitely made some money being short over the since the first of the year. So I think we just saw a lack of farmer selling today and a little bit of fund short covering ahead of the report.
Wait a second. I need to back up. So you say two-thirds to three-quarters are still left to market, and that'll happen in the August time frame?
Well, that's as of what was left. So I think we were probably 75% sold going into last week, and then of that 25%, that was still unpriced. Yeah, a third of that or 10%. So yeah, I think we priced 10% of our grain last week.
Yeah, we still have a lot to go into the marketplace still at this point then.
Unfortunately. Well, yes, yes.
All right. So what do you see? Good enough. What do you see now going forward for the next? Tomorrow's the is a big turning point, I suppose. But what do you see going forward?
Yeah, I think the farmers that have held on now want to wait and see what that report says tomorrow. They're, I guess, hopeful that we'll see 2 million less acres of corn. And they're hopeful that we see an ending stocks number 300 million less on the old crop corn than what we had estimated earlier. That all sounds well and good. But you know, if you look at normal acres and a normal yield, that still gets you close to a 3 billion, if not over a 3 billion bushel carryout. So the big picture is we still have too much corn, and without, you know, the demand ramping back up quickly, that's just too much corn. So we just need to take advantage of rallies. We can't get too optimistic. We can hope for 15, 20 cents, but much more than that, it's going to have to take dry weather in the month of July to really get us much higher than that.
Who would have thought something with a 2 in front of it for the carryout would feel like it was going to be a friendly number?
I know.
That just doesn't seem right.
I know. Only 2.8 billion, right?
Only 2.8. That's great. That's just fantastic. Oh, good. Gosh, what are you hearing for farmers about the condition of the crop? I think it sure is starting to look better.
Yes, here in the eastern half of the state, we've had good rains, probably too much rain in places, but you lose the ponds, but the rest of the field is probably in pretty good shape. Western Illinois, on the other hand, west central Illinois, really didn't get much rain. They got their first good rain last week, and some places didn't get more than maybe a quarter to a half inch. And so with this hot weather, they're going to need some more rain. But there's rain in the forecast just about every day this week, 50% chance just about every day. So hopefully Western Illinois can get some rains this week and make up for what they missed out on the last couple of weeks. But no doubt Eastern Illinois is in pretty good shape.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us for the day.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons. Joined us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.